And we
California
have so good afternoon. This is Mike Vandervoort. It's Tuesday, June 23rd, and we're in day two of our LGBT Pride Week themed week. June is usually Pride Month, and we just thought it would be cool to talk to some folks in the HR space who may have a closer view of that issue than many of us and get that perspective. So today we have a guest who I have only just now had a chance to hear in person for the first time, but have known for a while on Facebook, and that's Lara Lawson. Lara, good afternoon, and welcome to Drive Through HR. Thanks for being our guest today.
Oh, hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, so Lara, tell folks, you have such an interesting backstory. So tell folks about Lara and who you are and what you do, and let's get that out of the way first.
So I kind of got my feet wet in HR a long time ago doing job placement for people with disabilities, and I started doing training programs for them as well. Then I got roped into a recruiting position and have been recruiting for about 10 years. So I actually recently moved to Colombia last year, and here I joined my partner who owns Linked SAS, which is a translation and training and development firm, and we have combined that with my American counterpart, Linked Americas LLC, which is more recruiting and also training and development. So I wear a few hats. I do some headhunting, some recruiting, pre-screening candidates for multinationals. We do document translation for policies and procedures, and we design English language training and development programs for multinationals here in Colombia.
Cool. So you and your partner run essentially a global business out of
yes.
And just to be clear, it's not Colombia, South Carolina. This is Colombia Central South America, right? I'm not sure which. Is it Central or South for Colombia?
Technically, it's South America, but they kind of identify with Central America because Panama used to be a part of Colombia, and we're still mourning the loss. So I'm here in Bogota.
So how long have you been in Bogota?
I moved here in August, so almost a year.
Okay, and I saw on Facebook, as we all do, you guys are moving to a new house here, or have already made that move, maybe?
Yes, we're moving Friday, so I've been packing all morning.
Well, thanks for taking time out of packing and moving, which is like one of life's worst experiences that you have to voluntarily
yes.
undo. What I thought was really funny was earlier in the week you were like you apparently somebody was cooking pork nearby. And you were sort of like dreaming of barbecue.
Yes, I'm from Oklahoma, so yeah, barbecue is it's a religion. It's like football. So it's hard to find smoked meats here. You can find them, but smoked pork, especially, is just it's like my favorite thing in the world. And so I'm hoping with the new house we'll have a patio space and we can get a smoker if we can find one, and I can start making barbecue again.
If you're not comfortable with this too much personal, so how did you meet your partner and how did you find your way to Colombia? I mean, I just think that's a fascinating story, and it's such a huge move from Oklahoma to Bogota, Colombia.
Yeah, so we actually met, we have a lot of mutual friends on Facebook, and we're part of this sort of forum of queer people, and so we had been friends, we had been sort of exchanging conversation online and things like that for quite some time. And she invited me down here back in 2012. And I came down and our relationship sort of developed over that. So I was lucky to, be a headhunter at the time. So it's a phone position mainly. And so I have, my little Vonage line down here to have my U.S. number. And, I can do my work from here. So I was able to come and spend 2 or 3 weeks at a time, 3 or 4 times a year here, sort of developing this relationship over the last 3 years. And then she proposed in 2013, so I made the move in 2014.
Well, congratulations. So social media and modern technology communication of things like Vonage and Skype have allowed you to not only develop a relationship in another country, but literally build a business around it.
I mean, I use a myriad of things. I use a VPN client to make it look like I'm in the U.S. for certain content that's only available there. I use Google Voice to route my calls in all different directions and make sure that I can get text messages when I'm not at home, because obviously the Vonage line only works at home. I'm also able to use that to call from my computer when I'm sitting in one of my clients' offices connecting from their Wi-Fi. I can call using my Tulsa, Oklahoma number. You know, but actually I'm talking to you from Bogota on a computer.
Okay, cool. So since the show is, you know, kind of around an LGBT Pride Week, obviously you're probably very proud to have been proposed to and have a relationship that you've built, which is very cool. But so your perspective is probably a little different than someone working in the States, but you do work for Colombian clients, you do work for U.S. clients, and I guess what I'm trying to set up, like, what? So two things. One is sort of what's your view of the developing issues that gay marriage and stuff that are happening here. What's it like in Bogota? And then the other thing is sort of what's the work experience like? Can you kind of touch on those two points for us?
Yeah, I mean, I think I really grew up. I came out when I was 17, and so I grew up in, like, I'm in my 30s now. I'm not going to, give you a specific number, but I grew up in the age where this stuff was sort of starting to take form, I guess. So my very first Pride Parade that I ever went to, Barney Frank was a guest, and he was exceptionally inspiring. And so, we also had really vigorous protesters. Fred Phelps was in the same parade on the other side, obviously. And so I kind of got to see the movement and transition, I think, from what it was in the 70s and 80s and to where it has become. And I think really the key to the success of the gay rights movement has been people coming out, because it's so important that you have a personal connection with other people for them to understand that you are human, you're not evil, you're not threatening their marriage or their children or anything like that. It's harder to hate someone when you know them. And I think for a long time, gay people were really invisible. And so the whole process of people actually coming out to their family, to their coworkers and things like that, I think has really moved the whole movement forward rapidly. So here it's a little bit different. I tease that Colombians do religion the right way, which means that nobody goes to church, but they celebrate all the holidays and they get days off work. There's something like 16 federal holidays or something like that. So they're a very Catholic cultural country, and I would say that they don't go to church all that much, though, which, being from Oklahoma, is kind of different. So here it's a little more... Everything's a little more subtle. The Supreme Court has said that gay marriage should be legal, that gay rights should, or that gay couples should have the same rights as straight people. But the procurador, which is, I don't even know how to explain what this person is. He's an appointed person who's kind of like the attorney general, but he has a lot more power. He's basically told all the people who issue marriage licenses that if they issue one, they could be fired. So it's very hard to actually obtain a marriage license here, even though it's technically legal. So it's very different.
So where will you guys get married then?
So it's possible that we'll get married in Mexico, or the people who issue marriage licenses here are all lawyers, and so some of those lawyers are related to really important people and therefore can't just be fired at the whim of one man. So it's kind of word of mouth where you can actually get a marriage license here.
Interesting. And this, at risk of sounding like a stereotype, I mean, the Latin American machismo culture that I think a lot – we see in movies and stuff up here, and I know it's completely true, but there are kernels of truth in it. How does that impact at all, or is it not really a factor, and does it not really even exist?
Well, I think it's similar, but in different ways. Whereas I think lesbians are maybe more are looked down on just as much, but for it's tougher for gay men, which I think is very similar in the U.S. because men have this standard that you're held to, and if you're not, you know, macho, then you know you must be gay. First of all, they make a lot of assumptions. You're wearing pink today; that's a gay color. They throw around the slang, which is marica, a lot, and so it's different because, you know, when Glee came out in the U.S., I remember there was this big campaign around, like, don't call stupid things gay. It's a terrible thing to do. And obviously that message has not reached Colombia yet.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. And I know, again, from Facebook, the intelligence you can gather from Facebook. Actually, I think you sent this post, you tagged me in it. You made an observation around the fact that you were at a client and there were like 30 bottles of beer in the refrigerator in the office.
Yes.
That would never happen.
they were sitting out on desks in the training and development room. I have no idea who they were for, but
that would happen in many companies in Silicon Valley, but not so much, you know, maybe in Oklahoma and Texas and stuff like that. That made me laugh. So is it at risk of talking HR for a minute, is there a big difference in the HR cultures from the U.S. to Colombia?
There is, and there now most of the companies that I deal with are multinationals here, and so obviously they have relatively standard procedures, but I've seen a huge difference in the recruiting process. So typically they'll hire me to talk to people who they've already recruited, to basically pre-screen them. I talk about strengths and weaknesses, management skills for those types of positions, and a lot of technical stuff because I've specialized in recruiting engineers and IT people and stuff like that. So I'll talk to these people and also gauge their English at the same time because usually it's required for them to be bilingual. When they're passed off to my Colombian counterparts, often they'll be like, well, how old was that guy? How many kids does he have? You know, is he Catholic or is he Christian, which is what they call born-again people here. And, you know, so in the process of the interview with the person, once I hand them off, because I'm just so conditioned to not ask any of these questions. So when I hand them off and they do their Spanish interview with the company, often there'll be an entire section devoted to asking them about their family, if they're married, where they came from, how old they are, what their religion is. They talk about health problems sometimes, and what I call assumed socioeconomic status. So the question where you're from or where are you from is kind of loaded here because when they get a town, they may ask you specifically about the barrio or the neighborhood that you're from. And based on that, they can kind of figure out if you were raised middle class, if you were raised lower class, you know, or if you were a rich kid, and, you know, they can use that against you. So it's very different in the questions that you can ask and what they want to know as a part of the interview. A lot of times it's more about who do you know, who are your connections, than necessarily what are your qualifications.
Okay. So do you find as a, you know, as kind of, I guess, a U.S. trained recruiter with that legal perspective, do you find that difficult, or is that just something you just kind of have to get over as you blend into the culture there?
So I kind of, you know, I maintain my standards for myself because it's just awkward for me to ask those questions and, you know, say offer up that information. It's the same as I would as a U.S. recruiter. You know, we can talk about it, but I'm not going to specifically ask them for that. So I sort of maintain my standards and then pass them on to my Colombian cohorts and you know, let them do what they do. At that point, it's out of my hands.
Okay, so you're kind of the origination source, and after that, they're the decision maker, and you sort of you supply them who you feel are competent candidates, and let it go kind of locally from there.
Yeah, and I also talk about, you know, what I feel like are risks and what they need to maybe drill down on in the next interview or things like that.
Okay, cool. I was curious, my wife did business with several companies in India for a while. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, we were U.S.-based, but we traveled over there once or twice to do training. And you know, as you interacted with the Indian companies, they had, like, gender-specific, like, they would advertise jobs, and it would be, like, for males only. Or,
yeah.
You know, fresh, you know, age, kind of age, you had to be sort of, I mean, it was an entry-level position, but essentially if you were over 22 or whatever, I'm making up a number, you probably didn't. You know, so that, and that was very common. I mean, it was legal, it was common. Do you see that kind of same thing down there, or is it a little bit different in that regard?
I do to an extent. So for a position I recently evaluated with a senior manager IT director, and so for this person, they ended up coming down to a couple of candidates, and I was in the president's office discussing strengths and weaknesses of each candidate, and I'm saying, you know, this guy really seems like he has exactly the qualifications that you want, whereas this person is missing this person's missing that, and he looks at me and he's like, yeah, but we were really hoping for somebody younger in that position. And so, you know, that is, it's still kind of shocking after being here for 10 months. But ultimately, I think they are actually going to hire the guy that I recommended.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, so I think with the smaller businesses, it's definitely more entry-level jobs, it's a lot more like that, where even if they don't advertise it, they may have a specific thing in mind. And there are a lot of things that only men do here. You know, you only ever see male delivery boys and things like that. So I'm sure that if they aren't directly advertised, people still hold those stereotypes and they want, you know, the person that they imagine to be in that job.
Yeah. So I'm going to do a reset. At about a quarter after, we usually try to tell people who we are and who we're talking to. So reset is, I'm Mike Vandervoort. I'm hosting today. It's our LGB Pride Week for June on Drive-Thru HR, and our guest today is Lara Lawson. Lara is a global business self-employed entrepreneur who lives in Bogota, Colombia, and has been talking a bit, some about gay culture and some about recruiting. So... Thanks again, Lara, for being on the show. And let's kind of switch to the main theme, which is the LGBT stuff. And I know we've been touching on it, but so like you said, you came out when you were 17. My youngest son is gay, and he came out when he was 15, and had tremendous kind of pushback in high school. We lived in Indiana, and I don't imagine Oklahoma. It was a semi-rural, semi-suburban. Kind of mixed bedroom community of Muncie, Indiana, which is it's probably like being from, I don't know, I don't even know Oklahoma well enough to name a town. Anyway, it probably wasn't a lot different for him. So was your experience good or bad?
Apparently what happened, as far as I can tell, is that one of my good friends who I had actually come out to was overheard talking to another friend about their concern for my soul, my everlasting salvation, and another person heard them. And then from there, it actually spread to 5 different schools around the area. I'm from a very rural town in Oklahoma. So, it was like a countywide outing that happened. People who didn't even know me knew my name because it was I was one of the first openly gay people at my high school ever. So it was not easy, and I denied it for a long time. I just kind of, I wanted my secret to stay with the people that I knew. It was a mixed experience because I did have some people that were very supportive who I didn't expect or who kind of came out of the woodworks. Maybe we weren't close before, but we grew close after that. I had some other people confide in me that they were gay and they didn't come out until college. It was an interesting experience. It was horrible at the time, but now I'm glad that I got it over with when I did and didn't wait till I was older. So by college, it was kind of like I knew that I wanted to come out on my own terms because I was in yet another rural Oklahoma town with people who didn't know me. And so I waited a little while, but then I sort of slowly came out to everyone I knew, and I didn't have so much of an issue with it, I guess, because of the way that I came out. And I think that I use that experience to come out in the office over and over again at every new job that I have because I think a lot of times the way that you do something makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like and I hadn't really thought about, you know, that, I mean, that wasn't a planned question, but like, that's true. Like every time you have to meet a new group of people who don't know you, right, you have to kind of roll out your life history. And, for someone who's straight, you talk about your family or your church or sports or whatever, and it's not like gay people don't have similar But that's like one more thing you have to figure out how to integrate into the whole job, the new job or new employer experience, right?
Yeah, and it's something I think that I've become kind of skilled with because, you know, I worked with a lot of very conservative people and people who might not have to or want to tell me their opinion about me. And so that's kind of what I realized is that people don't want to be in a position where they have to give an opinion on something. So when I talk about my life, I don't really allow for that judgment. I don't say I'm gay. I put a picture up on my desk of my partner and they ask, who's that? And I say, that's my partner. And I talk about it like it's the most normal thing in the world. And I think that is kind of off-putting. It kind of doesn't allow people a window to attack if they're going to. But I think it's really important because I know a lot of the people that I've known who've been fired for being gay, because it's, you know, still possible in many, many states. A lot of times it was because they were outed by a surprise event. And I think that part of the, you know, obviously the owner of the business or the boss's religion may have had something to do with that. But I think part of it is that they feel like I've known this person for 3 years and I don't know anything about them. You know, some people actually in Oklahoma now that gay marriage has become legal there are getting married. And then when they try to put their spouse on their benefits, they're getting fired. And, you know, this, I think, is it's like if you worked with a straight guy and all of a sudden you found out one day he had a wife and kids that you've never heard of and you've worked for this or worked with this guy for 5 years, it's a bit shocking. And so I think that, you know, not as an excuse, but I think that when you come out sort of more immediately and you don't sort of allow for that shock, it puts you in a better position as a gay person to navigate the political waters of any office environment.
Have you found, now that you're kind of on your own, is it less of an issue for you, or is it still something that you have to, and especially living, kind of working in two, you know, across living in Colombia and working in the U.S. I mean, obviously, if they see you from your computer on your phone, you know, where you're using VoIP, probably doesn't make any difference. But have you found with clients that it's still an issue for you, or is it easier now that you're kind of on your own?
I think for me, I try not to talk about my personal life with clients. Regardless, I mean, coming from Oklahoma and being in Colombia, which is in a different way, but still similarly conservative, you know, I try not to make it an issue unless it absolutely has to be. The fact that, you know, a lot of my clients use my partner for translation and English teaching and me for training, development, and recruiting, you know, so we're there together, and she is a butch woman, so which you would think would be obvious, but people here, it's like they're oblivious to gay culture at all. So it's not obvious to them that she's gay, which if she walked around in the States, everyone would be like, oh, there's a lesbian, you know. But for me, you know, I'm more feminine looking. I have longer hair. So people don't automatically assume that about me. But I think a lot of times when our clients see us together, many of the more hip younger people, you know, make their assumptions and stuff like that. But we don't necessarily come out at a client's office, definitely.
Yeah, well, yeah, and okay. So you mentioned a minute ago about the fact that you could be fired. I guess that probably is based on where you lived, which is in Oklahoma, but it's true and still in a lot of states, right? So there's still legal bias on the, you know, on the books. There's certainly institutional bias and religious bias, you know, through people, even though it's changing and seemingly, you know, gay marriage is, you know, becoming the, you know, it's amazing to me how fast the movement for that particular issue has. For that particular subject, I don't know what word to use. I don't like issue. You don't like.
I'm not
gay marriage.
Politically correct, so I'm not the right person to ask.
Is marriage, but you know, but I mean, yeah, we have to define things and put them in buckets. So the gay marriage movement, I guess we'll try that. Has advanced very rapidly in the United States over the last 2 or 3 years. I mean, it's really kind of breathtaking to me at times to see it, you know, how much the advances have happened. And yet, you know, institutionally, there's still a lot of people that are, you know, not very comfortable and all that kind of stuff. And I lost my question here as I'm rambling on trying to define as an issue or a movement. But I mean, I really did lose my question. Sorry.
Well, you were talking about the ability to be fired in so many states.
Ability to be fired. So it's like the other issue that you see is sort of correspondingly is marijuana in the workplace, right? It's legal in Colorado, it's legal in Washington, it's legal, but it's not compliant under ADA. So we're kind of in this time where all these movements and corresponding legal changes by location and stuff are kind of, you know, it's happening faster than we can keep up with it, much like technology.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, you referenced that you could still be fired in the States. And you, I know you, that was something you sort of wanted to talk about a little bit, I think. So I was trying to tee that question up, and I did a really bad job of it. But there you go.
No, that's okay. Now, for at least 10 years, we've had legislation proposed at the federal level, which I think it's important that to tackle these issues at the federal level, because when you allow the state-by-state, different rules in different states, you end up with a lot of confusion, especially for companies that are in multiple states. So the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, or ENDA, has really overwhelming public support. Even people who don't support gay marriage understand that it's not right to fire someone just for being gay. And in a right-to-work state like Oklahoma, you can come up with any other excuse to fire them. A lot of people really, really support this, but it's yet to be passed still. And it seems like such a simple issue that, you know, people could actually agree on for the most part. But I really think that it has to be done at the federal level. And I think that a lot of the strides that we're seeing are these federal court decisions. But then you see states coming back and sort of making their own right to discriminate laws. So it's going to have to be settled at some point at the highest level, because it is very confusing to navigate, on a state-by-state basis. Even, you know, certain states, a marriage that's legal in one state is still not recognized in the other. So if you move, from, let's say, Massachusetts to Texas, in Texas, your partner may not have the same benefits as they had in Massachusetts. They may not be able to be on your insurance or things like that. So, yeah, it's definitely tricky waters to navigate, and you have to kind of be careful if you are moving, or if you change jobs. You have to be very aware of what your partner is eligible for in one company that they may not be eligible for in another.
And I also saw, again, on Facebook, the great source of all information now. You
can follow me on LinkedIn, too.
Yeah. But I don't know why I see you on LinkedIn. I see you on Facebook a lot more for the personal, the personal notes, right? You were at the doctor's office and made a comment about your $4 copay. So
yes.
you qualify in Colombia for the... I don't know what we would call socialized medicine or Obamacare or whatever.
Well, okay, so Obamacare is not socialized medicine by any means. And truthfully, what they have here is not socialized either, because that should typically be run by the government to qualify. So the VA is socialized medicine, Medicare is socialized medicine. So here what they have is... It's mainly private. It's somewhat subsidized by the government for the poorest people. But essentially, your health care is all-inclusive. So you join these cooperatives, and they include travel, health care, recreation, and disability insurance altogether. So you report your income to these people, and they give you a rate based on that income. It's like a sliding scale. And the same thing happens with utilities here, which is really cool. So essentially what you have are the people who earn a lot more. Those people are paying more into the healthcare system of a private organization, and the people who earn a lot less are paying in a lot less. And so it's essentially other people subsidizing the poorer people. But on the other hand, with that, you have your disability insurance aligned with that level of income. So the richer people, if they should become disabled, receive a lot more disability payments than a poorer person would. That's sort of based on what you pay in. So it's a really interesting structure. So I'm somewhere in the middle, and my copay was $4. But it is required for everyone to have health care coverage here. And if you can't afford it, it's typically like $10 a month for people who make nothing. So it's an interesting system that covers everyone. And so even before I had insurance here, I had to go to the emergency room. My friend went to the emergency room for the same thing, a kidney stone. They did all the same tests, all of the same everything. And her bill was $6,000, and my bill was $800.
Wow. I'm going to cut you off because we're down to the last 10 seconds. Thanks so much for being on the show. It was very interesting, and I will talk to you soon on Facebook, I guess. Thanks for being our guest
all right,
today.
Thanks, Michael.
See ya.
Bye-bye.